Founders Ramble. Stories from entrepreneurs, how they started, why they started, and where they're going next. Brought to you by the Ministry of Startups.
Hello, Amar from Yabota.
Hello, Vinny. How are you doing?
I feel a bit coldy, so forgive me if I'm a bit stuffed up. You're a hard man to get. You're away on holiday.
And yeah, it wasn't by choice. It was my mum's birthday, so I kind of got told I had to be away.
Well, you are a golden boy, and my ma told me earlier that he took his mum with the rest of his family around southern Spain, enjoying the sun and tapas, no doubt.
Just the tapas. It was raining all week, except the day we left. But that's what else can you expect?
There we go. So we should find out who you are, really. You are the founder. There is a co-founder as well, James, who may join us later on. But he's busy beavering away, which I think is a good sign, of a company called Yabota. What, who, when, where, what is Yabota? Yeah.
So I'm one of the founders. We've got several. But you need several people to do what we're doing, which is building a new banking platform that runs in the cloud. It's something which it's now live. Our first client is out there. It's called LiveLend. So if you go to liveLend.co, you will ultimately be using a facility provided by Yabota, which is very exciting. But what we've done is build a new banking infrastructure that's very fast to set up, very easy to use, and gives a lot of flexibility in terms of the financial products that our clients can operate on them.
That makes sense. In the old days, there was no such thing as a cloud, so it's fairly easy to predict that in the old days, that software, I presume we'd have to get on a DVD install, there'd be an IT technician, it wouldn't go the way it does now. Am I right in that?
It would have definitely been different. I wasn't around in the old days, So
it wouldn't be. I suppose if you go back far enough, in the really old days, it wasn't even necessary. But nowadays, with the modern world of banking and financial tech, it is. So it's quite pioneering, having a cloud operating platform. You've got how many people working in there?
There's 22, 23 of us. It's one of those things where we're not the first cloud banking provider, or not the first cloud banking platform. It's more what we've set the system up to be able to do, we believe is very different from everyone else, which is all around essentially the flexibility of products that you can run on it. So really bespoke mortgages, really bespoke loans, really bespoke card products, things that you just don't see in the industry really at the moment.
So really bespoke as in really adaptable, and you can put in lots of different characteristics as opposed to sort of a big generic clunky thing.
Yeah, it's a loan I get now or a mortgage I have now is fundamentally the same as what my parents would have got back in the day, or their parents have got before them. That nothing's changed in terms of the economics of it. It's just kind of gone from a book to a big computer to a smaller computer to your phone. That's kind of what's happened. It's not you don't get like the ability to say I want to be able to change my terms at the drop of a hat, and the cost of that change is priced in and it's actually reasonable and you can unwind that if you want to and things like that. Being able to do a lot of those types of things are something we can facilitate, but also being able to then actually make the product itself more responsive to things that happen in your real life without you having to worry or think about them, or you as an end customer, but also for our clients not having to worry or think about them, that there's just information about the fact that you've moved home or you've had a pay rise or whatever it is.
So how many of the people in the developers then? Because it sounds like if you're tweaking this monster so regularly, it's not going to be easy to do.
Well, most of it's developers, including me and James, but it's not development driven, so to speak. A lot of it is config driven. So what we've done is develop a system that people can configure, our clients can configure and say, I want a product, or I want to sell a product, I want to sell a mortgage, where your APR varies based on how difficult your commute is, right? So if your commute's more difficult and you have the sort of job where if you're late a lot, you might get fired, you're probably a more risky proposition than if you live next door to where you work and you'll have a job for the rest of your life because of that or whatever, right? Like I'm just kind of a random idea like that, but someone can just go and type in something that the system then just understands and things just happen. Right, so it's not it for us as a development team building a platform that does this, we kind of don't care, we've just given someone the facility, the ability to do that.
I see. Oh, that makes sense. So you've made a very flexible, extremely adaptable piece of software,
yeah,
and that they can tweak, and they're not going to be phoning you up going, God, if only I had this facility that I could change.
Yeah, or if they want it, they can phone us up, or they can, you know, drop us a note, and, you know, it's not fixed.
I've noticed quite a lot when I come and see you guys on the first floor here in the Ministry of Startups. Sometimes, I don't know if I walk in at the convenient time, but last week I walked in and I was offered a beer, and there's quite a bit of fun that goes on in there. Also, quite a lot of colourful characters, may I say.
Sure.
What is your hiring policy? How do you decide who you're going to work with?
Well, it's a good question. It's not an easy question. We try to organise ourselves around capabilities. Right, so the fact that I've got X years of experience doing things that I do, James has got Y years of experience, and someone else has got 2 or 3, kind of doesn't matter if the person with 2 or 3 is just really, really, really good at what they do.
Right.
And they are really well versed in what they do, and they just understand. So we look for that. Right? We really actually look for people who have problem-solving mindsets and actually want to apply themselves. Kind of what happens around that is all sort of part of what makes them them, right? Mm. So it's okay if you are, you know, if you're very different to everyone else. It certainly makes things much more fun and interesting in the office, and you get a lot more different perspectives at the table.
Is there a crazy question that you ask? Is there another? Is there some technique to find this out?
No, I was kind of shaking my head as Vinny was asking the question there, but there isn't a crazy technique or a crazy question. I think it's just what's the vibe you get off someone when you're speaking to them? What do you see? And we've seen that go both ways, where we've had people come and go, and we were like, yeah, we sort of did get that kind of read off them, and actually we probably had the right sense. And in other cases, you're like, yeah, we knew this person would be fine, and, you know, they're fine, and it's great to have them around, and you know, the rest is kind of history.
Makes for a more interesting life as well,
because yeah,
I mean, well, if you're a startup, you might end up spending 10 hours a day, maybe even more some days, depending. I think a lot of us see these people more than we do our loved ones. So if you can have a bit of a chat and bants along the way, then all the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, certainly in other places where I've worked, the teams that I've worked with have been actually much more important than the work that I've done or the work that we were doing. Mm. From a personal perspective, I think that's true of other people who I've worked with as well. It's just the people who you're with. That's really what we're trying to do here on top of everything else. We want people to look back at this, want them to look back and say, wow, that was an amazing time in life, and look what we did.
So what about the future? Currently, you've been going how long?
Around 2 years, just under 2 years.
Yeah. And so it's quite early. It's very much a hive of activity every time I go in there, apart from the beer bit, but that's all right. You're allowed to unwind.
It's still activity.
So, yeah, where do you see it going?
We're pushing ourselves pretty hard with the LiveLend business right now, because you learn a lot once you're sort of facing off to real people, and we're trying to make sure that we've got all these real world scenarios covered off. And then we're looking at it in terms of, well, there's X number of clients that we want, and what do we want those clients to look like, and so on and so forth. So there's kind of like a bit of business building there, but then actually, you're both as a technology company, you're both as not the financial products platform company in terms of what we are right now. We just have a first product that we can sell, and we have sold, and we're sort of, you know, going through the whole kind of startup grind as a result of that. Mm. I think there's a lot of thinking around, well, how do we just go general in terms of what we do, and what could that mean for everyone?
You seem like a very flexible person, perhaps reflecting the very software that you're designing. You're like, I'm not sure, we're checking on a regular basis. One of the reasons that a lot of businesses are successful is because they have the ability to pivot. A lot of people have a very clear vision on where they're going, and then they're incredibly disappointed when they don't get there and get pissed off about it, and the whole thing falls apart. Whereas you seem to be sort of... You're a bit of a surfer. You're on the crest of a wave. You're not sure where that wave's going, but you seem to be surfing it quite well.
I'm definitely a terrible surfer, and anyone who's ever been surfing with me will tell you that. But the I think what anyone wants out of their career, or what anyone thinks that they're good at any point in time, changes. So it's very hard to say this is exactly where we need to land in 2 years' time or 3 years' time. part of my frustrations with having been, you know, air quotes, an employee in the past was you didn't really get a say on things you thought were, you know, perhaps poor decisions by the people above you or suboptimal decisions by the people above you or around you. That's another thing we're, you know, hopefully collectively trying to avoid as a, you know, as a group of people who work together, which is let's just get ourselves somewhere where everyone's happy. We've got a product that is maintainable, supportable, that we're proud of, that our clients can use, that their customers are happy with. Mm. Times 10, times 100, times 1,000. However many times we can do that is a benchmark of how good we are as a collective.
Get the product right, they will follow. You've got one in the bag, and I'm sure there's many more to come.
Hopefully, yeah. You never know.
What about the sleepless nights? Many of those since you left the corporate world, the safety net of employment?
Yeah, but it's not kind of been out of fear of failure. It's been my kind of, you know, my personal reflection on it. It's been more around what do I need to do to make it work kind of thing, or how do I solve the problem? Mm. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. But
are you a perfectionist?
No, I probably have OCD more than anything else.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that beneficial?
Sometimes, not always.
I see. Well, Mark, it's been good talking to you. I'm going to keep you in the room, and we're going to pull in James, who's now free, a fellow co-founder, and ask the two of you a few more questions. Yabota, if people want to find out more, they've got a little flavour of it from this so far, where will they go?
Yabota.uk, or you can follow us on Twitter at Yabota Platform, or if you're in the Ministry Building, you can find one of us somewhere. We've got mugs sitting around in some of the kitchens, so if you have one of our mugs, you can, I mean, don't bring it back in the sense of bring it back, we need it back, but, you know, bring it over, have a chat over the mug.
So I can use the mug as a vehicle for getting to know you guys.
Yeah, as a pathfinder.
Yeah, it's like 1950s America with an apple pie. Not really, no, it's not like that. It's like, it's a mug. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. All right. So at this point, another co-founder, Chris, joined us. I asked Chris, how does Yabota get bigger and sell future software products?
So the industry is relatively tight in terms of the communication. So our analysis on this is that there are actually only so many ears and eyes that we can go in front of. There's an element of word of mouth. So we've already had one lead from somebody being made aware that we're doing this. This was driven through local press and local connections. And then we're going off to trade fairs and getting some feedback in terms of where we think the services are going to work for different people in the different segments that we're looking at.
Do you think one day you'll have to have a whole sales team on this?
Oh, I think almost certainly. The industry that we're in, we're going into something that isn't impulsive. You know, we're not looking to get a billion customers. We're not that sort of business. Right. So it's going to be.
And even the customers you do get are going to do extensive research. It's going to be an informed decision. It's probably going to have to go through a board. No one's going to go, yeah, that sounds great. Nice to meet you. Let me sign that.
So the pre-sales part is the bit that we're starting to build up. Now that we've got the product, we've got it live, we've got it proving, we've got a case study ultimately for somebody who's now using this. Now we can start to make some noise, but we need to be ready to receive the inquiries and to make sure that we can service all of those correctly.
Would it be fair to say that you'd be working a lot less hard and probably earning a lot more if you put your skills to some other use, a use that wasn't yours? So if you just said, I'm going back to the corporate world.
In the short term, yeah.
Yeah.
But that comes with, there's a trade-off in that, right? And it's, you know, I haven't had to wear a suit or leather-soled shoes or anything like that I don't find comfortable on a daily basis for over 2 years, but that's a different story, but certainly for 2 years, right?
And there's a venture that's being built that could, well, let's say will be massive as well.
Even if it fails for whatever reason and, you know, we all sort of drift back into normal jobs, whatever a normal job is, the amount of stuff you've learned and the contacts you make and the stories you've got to tell along the way, like that in itself is just priceless because you can...
Do you feel like that as well, Jane?
I mean, completely. I mean, to go back to your question in terms of would it be less involved, etc. I mean, we worked on massive change projects, different arenas, but our path has been very similar in doing the same sort of thing in large banks. We've embraced this with the same traits, which is ownership, willing to, you know, willing to do what it takes to succeed, know what we're shooting at, you know, actually know what success actually looks and feels like, so we've got something to aim for. So to answer that question, do I think it would be any different if I was back in the corporate? Well, it wasn't for me for the last 20 years. What this is, the to-do list is just so much more varied. We're writing code, we're hiring, we're having to deal with some regulations that are changing, as a lot of companies are at the moment. So that's on the to-do list with a hard deadline. Yeah. So it never stops. It's just a matter of prioritizing and keeping plates spinning and making sure that we as the co-founders and the people with a vision in our heads don't block ultimately. Now there are now 18 people that are reliant on us to get them to do what they're here to do and want to do.
Does that scare you a bit, the whole having people under you?
So we're a very flat company, and long may that last. We've brought people in to do jobs we know that they can do. Everybody's growing, everybody's learning. We don't have all the answers. We're discovering it. There's an element of actually just empowering them and enabling them to do what they're here to do.
That was a very political answer.
It's not really. It is the truth. The team that we've got have taken great ownership. It hasn't just been us that have been working whatever is required. They've been doing it. We haven't had to ask them.
You both seem very pragmatic, which I think is fantastic. Is that because you're from a tech background?
I think it's because we have to deal with each other.
Because normally you get one that's a bit zanier, and I'm sure which one it is, if there is one.
It's because we're on our best behaviour right now, probably. But everyone in the team almost is technical, right? So if someone comes up with just the "wouldn't it be great if," and you sort of instantly know if it's even remotely possible or not, and therefore the pragmatism is sort of built into, I'm just not even going to bother wasting everyone's time on something that is really either 200 years away because society isn't there yet, or it's just not possible because physics isn't there yet. And you just leave it, right? And that's, it's pretty good not to have to waste too much energy on conversations like that.
Everything has an opportunity cost is one of the most used phrases, everything we're doing. We've got to balance it against everything else that we should be doing.
The current account I have is the same as the current account my dad has, it's the same as the current account my granddad had, and that probably just goes back all the way to when the concept started. Mm. Nothing has actually changed, right, in this sector in terms of what people get. You get pet insurance added onto accounts, you get stuff coming up on a mobile phone, you get the ability to pay without really putting in a PIN and stuff, and there's miracles
in that. Nice additions, but the whole core's not changed, really.
Fundamentally, what you're buying, it's not like you've gone from action figures to video games.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
But that's, you know, that has fundamentally changed childhood for people who were born pre-1983 and post-1987 with whatever the actual numbers are there, which I've completely made up, but I think I read them somewhere. With this sort of overlap in the middle, that there were a group of people who got to do both, right? And hopefully through what we're doing and lots of other very, very good companies in the space that we're in are doing, is that there is a generation that's going to be getting banking products that look like the older banking products, as well as what future generations will
get. Yeah, we're at the overlap in the Venn diagram right
hopefully.
Now.
Hopefully.
If a large bank actually wants to start to embrace new markets, etc., how can they do it? So in our experience, certainly on the project we worked beforehand, there's a frustration at the C-level management that they can't really go and do anything anymore. They're basically completely tied down with their legacy systems. However, the legacy systems do a very important job, which is ultimately the financial health of their business in a banking environment. You want to go into a space, you need to be more dynamic, but you also want to be able to set things up, go into the market quickly, try things out, respond to changes very quickly, but ultimately you need to feed back to the mothership of a balance sheet, etc. We can go and do that for them. We can set that up and we can use their systems to do all of that. When it comes to regulation, we have built this while in the highly regulated environment. So we're going through the dots and the crosses pretty much, which a retrofit on old banking legacy technology, a big investment, huge time sink, etc. We're there already. So any companies that are facing the situation where, crikey, this is coming up, really, we are.
It's a bit like if I could use the website term, like in the old days, if you wanted a website, you'd be like, oh Christ, I have to learn HTML or pay someone loads of money to design a website. And it probably is going to be, I think it's probably like $5,000 or something crazy for a really simple website. And then off the peg solutions came and you didn't have to do that. But you were quite happy to pour your money into those things.
Yeah.
So is that the same sort of nature?
That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
You can basically call this as a service.
Mm.
Yeah. We're a banking platform as a service.
Got it. So I could learn all the really hard, complicated stuff and employ loads of people, or I could employ these two sexually attractive young men
steady on
to do it for me.
Glasses are off for the tape.
Thank you, that is really helpful. Well, I should leave you because I know you've got a lot of work to do despite the amazing progress you've made. But before I do, there may be some potential clients that are interested in finding out more. Two questions. How can they find out more about Yabota, and why Yabota? Why are you called Yabota? So let's start with that. Why are you called Yabota?
So we wanted to find something that was, you know, searchable, unique, etc., because pretty much every company now has something like that. Through a lack of imagination, we ended up I personally ended up looking through a gibberish generator and picked a word I liked.
No, you didn't. A gibberish generator.
That's literally the thing I Googled and then clicked on the first few gibberish generate types.
I didn't know there was such a thing, but that must be something that is definitely not a word then.
Is that the rules
of the gibberish generator?
No, I think it just generates gibberish, and this was one of those things that just happened to sort of perhaps be. I think it's a name in Japan. I think it might also mean something in Japanese. We've also heard rumors that it means other more slightly cruder things in certain Central Asian dialects and things like that. But you know, these are unconfirmed rumors.
If anyone knows what swear word it might be, get in touch with James and Amar at Yabota. And how do people get in touch with you?
Hello@yabota.uk.
Thanks very much to James and Amar from Yabota. Towards the end of that interview, someone decided to just start pouring some concrete outside the room we were in. So that's why the audio went a bit dodgy. And I cut it off probably a bit quicker than I normally would. I had another couple of questions ready to be fired at them, but I think they gave us a fantastic flavour nonetheless of exactly what they do at Yabota. If there's anything you want to know about Yabota, then hopefully you can find it at yabota.co.uk, or you can get in touch with the lads and ask them questions directly. This has been a podcast brought to you by the Ministry of Startups, and my name is Vinnie White. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated. I'm going on holiday for a bit because, well, why not? And when I come back, there'll probably be a few more podcasts. Cheers.
Founders Ramble. Stories from entrepreneurs, how they started, why they started, and where they're going next. Brought to you by the Ministry of Startups.